हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमभिर्विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहाद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 102, verses 31 to 46, the process of yoga. Sri Uddhava said, My dear lotus-eyed Krishna, by what process should one who desires liberation meditate upon you? Of what specific nature should his meditation be? And upon which form should he meditate? Kindly explain this to me. Can you explain to me this topic of meditation? The BBT purport states, It has already been elaborately explained by the Supreme Lord that without loving devotional service rendered to Him in the association of devotees, no other process of self-realization will work. Therefore, it may be asked why Uddhava is again referring to the system of meditation. Dhyana. The acharyas explain that one cannot fully appreciate the beauty and perfection of bhakti yoga unless one sees its superiority to all other processes. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, so what was that? Bhakti is the highest, yes, of course. But the point is no, it is the highest, that's it. That has to be appreciated. And that, because otherwise it's yes, but. There's no yes, but. It's, this is what it is. Ah. This guy's just happened to be walking by? Okay. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, sitting on a level seat that is not too high or too low, right? Means not too high that if you fall off that there's a problem, and not too low that you're going to, it's also down where, you know, yeah, down in traffic or something like that. You know, so you have to find the proper place. Keeping the body straight and erect, yet comfortable. So that means you have to be able to be comfortable sitting erect. That's why they do the yoga asanas. So it's considered that you've perfected an asana if you can sit in it for 2 hours and 45 minutes straight with zero discomfort. If there's any discomfort, keep practicing. Like that, that's considered an asana is perfect. Right? Yeah. Placing the two hands on one's lap and focusing the eyes on the tip of one's nose. One should purify the pathways of breathing by practicing the mechanical exercises of Pudaka, Kumbhaka, and Rechaka. And then one should reverse the procedure, Rechaka, Kumbhaka, Pudaka. Right? So you breathe one way, you know, you're breathing out, so here, what is it? How you say? Out, in, hold. Then you do hold, out, in. Right? We've never even heard of that one, right? So these are all the things, yeah. Having fully controlled the sense, so that means now this breathing is there, where you can stop it. Having stopped it, now, then having fully controlled the senses, that's the next thing. One may then practice pranayama step by step. Right? Beginning from the Muladhara chakra, one should move the air continuously upward like the fibers in the lotus stalk until one reaches the heart, where the sacred syllable Om is situated like the sound of a bell. One should thus continue raising the sacred syllable upward distance of 12 angulas, where the omkar should be joined together with the 15 vibrations produced with anushwara, right? Fit means on your, that's 15 angulas on your hand. Right? Is that 15? Did he say 15 or said 12? 12, that's 12. Excuse me, why I said 15. I don't know. Oh, that was because there was the sound. That's 15 angulas. So you see from the heart to the throat is here. Then the next chakra is again 12. You understand? That's then how it works. Right? Then from here down to the where it is, the navel. It's not exactly the navel, but like that. That's how it works. Your whole thing is off of this. You know, it's your width, how long the arm is. You know, you take that. That's your elbow. Then that goes up to here. The whole body is off of that. Right? So it's something you can measure. You don't have to get out there and one finger, two fingers. You know, you have that. Right? So does that mean all those new guys like this, they're all yogis or something? Like that? Or they are, how you say, you know, into silpa and vastu and all that kind of stuff where you use all the angulas and all that. Yeah. Right. So in other words, that's their main occupation, and then they have to do DJ and stuff on the side just to, you know, pay the bills and all that, because the other one doesn't actually do so good, right? Okay. Being fixed in the omkara, one should carefully practice the pranayama system 10 times at each sunrise, noon, and sunset. Thus, after 1 month, one will have conquered the life air. Right, so that's the standard. After 1 month of that, then now you can stop the breathing, then you're doing good. So if you can't do that in a month, then go find something else to do. Right? You know. Keeping the eyes half closed and fixed on the tip of one's nose, being enlivened and alert, right? Not half asleep and like that. Because you'll notice yogis, they don't have a bruise on their forehead. Right? Because they're not falling asleep and then hitting the ground and waking up again. Yeah. Like that. One should meditate on the lotus flower situated within the heart. This lotus has 8 petals and is situated on an erect stock lotus. Lotus stock, excuse me. One should, yeah, just standard lotus, the stock lotus, right? You know, not the, okay, yeah. One should meditate on the sun, moon, and fire, placing them one after the other within the world, that lotus flower. Because Krishna sits on sun, moon, and fire. His asan always has sun, moon, and fire in it. So if you're doing the elaborate installation of the asan for the Lord, you install sun, moon, and fire. Right? And here he doesn't get into the difficult point, but we'll see later in the chapter that each one of them has parts. One has 10 parts, one has 12, one has 16. So all these different, yeah. So we sometimes say, oh, but we have so many rules. No, we don't. These are rules. Placing my transcendental form within the fire, one should meditate upon it as the auspicious goal of all meditation. Right? So, because fire is on the top. So, sun, moon, and fire. So, that's on the top. So, then the Lord goes there. That form is perfectly proportioned, gentle, and cheerful. It possesses 4 beautiful long arms, a charming, beautiful neck, a handsome forehead, a pure smile, and glowing, sharp-shaped earrings suspended from 2 identical ears. So he doesn't have one big, one small, one sticking out, one back. You know, they're both exactly the same. His beauty is the symmetry, right? So everything's symmetrical, right? Just if you wonder why it's mentioned, right? That spiritual form is the color of a dark rain cloud and is garbed in golden yellowish silk. The chest of that form is the abode of Srivatsa and the goddess of fortune. And that form is also decorated with the conch shell, disc, club, lotus flower, and garland of forest flowers. The 2 brilliant lotus feet are decorated with ankle bells and bracelets. And that form exhibits the Kostuba gem along with an effulgent crown. The upper hips are beautified by a golden belt, and the arms are decorated with valuable bracelets. All of the limbs of that beautiful form capture the heart, and the face is beautified by merciful glancing. Pulling the senses back from the sense objects, one should be grave and self-controlled, and should use the intelligence to strongly fix the mind upon all the limbs of my transcendental form. Thus, one should meditate upon that most delicate transcendental form of mind. One should then pull the consciousness back from all the limbs of that transcendental body. At that time, one should meditate only on the wonderful smiling face of the Lord. Being established in meditation on the Lord's face, one should then withdraw the consciousness and fix it in the sky. Then, giving up such meditation, one should become established in me and give up the process of meditation altogether. Right? So then, again, he said before, just become absorbed in him. Remembering him, that's what's going to work. So this process of Stanga Yoga, this meditation, you're going to go there. Then from there, you're going to go to the sky, then back to the Lord again, who's not Paramatma, as Bhagavan. Yeah. So that's why our process just goes directly to Bhagavan. Yeah. So if does that make sense? So that is simple. That's what will be done as one progresses at the end of the devotional process. That will be continuous. That will be maintained. While the technical rules and regulations that are there, those are for the lower stages of religion where they're all being applied. Then you connect that to the Lord. Then that's where now it becomes dynamic. But that connection to the Lord is the real thing. So just being connected to the Lord, that's all that's required. Right? But as long as we are conditioned, then those the secondary attributes of religion, they're followed until we come to that level. And that level means all the time, not just now and again. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense? Yeah?
Maharaj, here from the lotus face.
The lotus face.
Meditation is going to sky. It means like spiritual abode there, trying to uplift.
Yeah, but the point is what he's meaning here is that this process is given up. Because you go to the face, but here you're just him. Then you have to go to the point where it's actually his pastimes. So this is how far you can take it in the Ashtanga Yoga system. That's why you see that the devotees in the Satya Yuga, they perform that to get to that point. They're always absorbed in the Lord. Then they give that up and now perform direct service. You know what I mean? Actual, you know, engaging the senses in the Lord's service. It's not just the mind. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, the spiritual world, the engagement of the senses is the higher. Right? Mm-hmm. And just the meditation, that's a lower level. You know, on this, it's all spiritual. In the material world, then we'll make the mistake thinking doing nothing is higher. Yes. And then doing activities is lower. Yes. Right? Because you see all those processes that use gyan, they always move up and think I do nothing, therefore I'm better. Right? You know, I exist, therefore I am, but I do nothing, therefore I am superior. Right? Another, how you say?
Variation.
Mm-hmm.
Variation.
Yeah, another variation. Another Mahavakya. Okay? Srila Vishnu Chakra, yes.
I remember in one class you thought that for the body is pranayama, means chanting Hare Krishna.
Yes, yes. That's for us, that's where you're engaging it. So you're already engaged on the Bhagavan level. But this one is that because you're not chanting or not absorbed like that, they'll actually stop. See, because the mind, as long as the breath is moving, it's disturbed. It's active, it's, you know, it'd be controlled by passion and all that. But you stop it, then it becomes peaceful. Right? It means the breath, not the mind. You stop the breath, the mind will stop. You wonder why the mind, because the breath is moving. Right? So I guess if you want momentary, you could just hold your breath, and then you get peace of mind, and then when you breathe again, then it'll go crazy again, but whatever. So, what's being pointed out is these mechanical systems that are given in the 20 religious processes, these are inferior to pure bhakti. Right? So that's always what we're trying to bring out. Because now we're seeing, we're getting to the conclusion of the Bhagavatam. So we have to bring out this point is that it's pure devotion. That's the real thing. Other things can be supportive of if they're engaged. But only if they're engaged in Krishna's service. But it's not that they're automatically. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, this describes the result of meditation culminating in samadhi. When the yogi has reached complete concentration through meditation, the illusion created by false identification with senses, sense devatas, and sense objects is destroyed. Right? Because we're again the adiatmic, adidaivic, and adibhautic elements. that are there. That's what we're absorbed in, right? Mm-hmm. I have senses. That's the adiatmic. I see things. That's the adibhautik, and that's controlled by the devatas, mm-hmm. right? That whole process is going on. So then one transcends that because one has no false identity. Because one doesn't think, I am the body, I am the senses, I am what I see. Yes. You know, like this. One goes beyond to, one is Krishna. So therefore, whatever seeing in that is all because it's all Krishna's potency. So then Krishna's arranging. And so I'm seeing in connection with, seeing it in connection with Krishna. Mm. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So you see it here is because of not doing that, that's how you get all these other philosophies.
Yes.
Right? That's where they come up. The Vedic has its processes, but they're all meant for devotion. But now people make philosophies based on the Veda that aren't about devotion. So that doesn't mean it's there. Karmakanda is there to simply, you have material desires, engage those desires in Krishna's service. Right? And then with time, that can be given up, where you just do things connected with service. And for service, you don't need to do so many things that are mentioned in the Karmakanda. Mm-hmm. Yeah, basic maintenance of the body, that's there. But other things are not required. Yeah. So it's meant as a stepping stone, that people make philosophies so that they don't progress towards bhakti, that they get stuck somewhere. So, yeah. Because the yoga system's there to meditate on the Lord and become a pure devotee. Mm-hmm. But Patanjali makes a philosophy where they use this meditation process, but it's not about coming to pure devotional service. Mm-hmm. You understand? We use the process of, you know, logically analyzing things and all that so that we can better appreciate, you know, based on what we've heard from Shabda, from authority, from the scriptures. Mm-hmm. But then Gotama makes a philosophy out of that where it's just by logic I'll understand the Supreme, mm-hmm. or I'll get the perfection of life. Mm-hmm. You understand? So like this, all the schools that come up, they're actually based on a Vedic principle, but then they make a philosophy out of it, that the philosophy is different than its actual purpose to bring you to pure Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. So, yeah? Okay, conclusion. The Lord is devoted to His devotees. Due to the great variety of desires and natures among human beings, there are many different theistic and atheistic philosophies of life. However, although there are limitless opinions how to act in this world, ultimately there is only one proper method of action. Right? So all these philosophies, they may be theistic where they accept the Vedas or not, or accept the Supreme Lord or not. But the point is there's only one proper method, and that's bhakti. Nothing else will get you out of the material world. Bhakti is the only process. All these others are simply because under the modes we think so many things are very important.
Yes. Right?
Those who fix their consciousness on the Lord, giving up all material desires, share with Him a happiness that cannot possibly be experienced by those engaged in sense gratification. Because you're sharing with Krishna. Krishna is unlimited. If He's happy and you're sharing that happiness with Him, how much happiness are you dealing with?
Unlimited.
Right? Unlimited. But now, it's you and your senses. You know? Like, how much happiness you're dealing with. How much 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair can squeeze out of something that's dead matter that's unconscious while they're conscious. Basically, zero.
Yeah. Only dreaming.
Maybe that's it, yeah. Now they dream how they are enjoying it.
That is the origin of Buddha.
Huh?
That is the origin of Buddha.
Yeah. Well, that would be is that since the amount of happy, we want to be happy, and the amount of happiness you're getting is actually nothing, therefore nothingness must be the source of happiness, so therefore if I absorb in nothing, I'll be happy. That's Buddhism. Yeah. So, yes. The Lord is so pleased by His pure devotee, He becomes His follower. Right? That's what we're saying. It's all these levels of consciousness. You're being controlled by the modes of nature in the first three. Right? Being deep sleep, dream, and wakefulness. But in the fourth state, you're transcendentally situated in Turiya. That's the situation of the Lord. That's the spiritual platform. But then in the fifth level, prema, that actually controls the Lord. Okay? Therefore, by His grace, even when harassed by material desires, a devotee is not defeated by sense gratification. Right? It means the sense gratification doesn't distract him from pure devotional service. So either it means it just the, you know, at the point of perception, it's removed. Or comes up this contemplation, and then through intelligence, it's removed. Or it may come up, and one may start to engage in activities, but then one will see the connection of the Lord and give that up. In any case, sense gratification does not win. Devotion wins. Right? His unflinching devotion brings the Lord under control. The Lord cannot be thus controlled by any other method. In order to attain such exalted position, one should give up association with women and those intimately associated with women, because these cause the greatest suffering and bondage, right? Because the biggest amount of material absorption is when you combine the masculine and feminine element on the material platform. Right? So when men and women get together, that's then when the greatest amount comes. Like you and your friend, you just sit there, you know, and talk, right? Maybe you go get some chips like this. But if it's a man and a woman, then you need land, you need a house, you need everything. It just keeps going. You know? Does that make sense? That's how it works. And not even you have, like Bali Maharaj, he has Sutala. He's not happy. He wants the, you know, Indra's place. Right? You know, Hiranyakashipu took the whole universe. So there's no end to that. So that's why it says this is the main problem. Whenever is that attachment to this and thinking that this will make us happy, that's what will distract you the most. Because everything's included. Right? All 24 elements can be engaged in this. In this relationship. Other relationships, not all 24. Right? So it's the greatest. So that's why that has to be given. That's the epitome of sense gratification, is this concept of man and woman will be happy together eternally. Right? That's the problem. We have to give that up and think, no, it's being connected to Krishna. That's the eternal platform. Because Krishna's energy is feminine, he's masculine, that's the actual connection. Everything else is temporary, and because of that temporariness, it's always going to be frustrating. No matter what you arrange. Like, by the time you actually finish paying the mortgage, the house is falling apart. So now you still have to pay the same amount of money, but now to fix it.
You're also falling apart,
so then you can't make the money. And then besides that, is all the kids have moved on. And now you have this big monster house, and there's no kids, which is why you built the house in the first place.
They may kick you out also.
And they may kick you out also, yes. That's right. It just depends. Yeah. See, is that would be more of a... coming from a culture where there is kind of family kind of relations, because then they were close enough that they might do that. Well, in the first world, generally, there's not close enough that generally doesn't happen. You know? Because why would they kick you out? They would just, you know, go through the courts and like that. You know, they're not going to bother with you. You know? Like that. So, some people, they have the big house, and then they have the granny suite? Or what do you call them? Granny flat. You know, maybe in different cultures you call it a different thing. You have a big, huge house. Connected to the house as part of the house, you have this little complete unit in itself, but it's small.
Outhouse.
That's a toilet. Okay, yeah. Where I come from, that's called a toilet. You know, because it's outside. Okay, but you all know what I'm talking about. So, some people, I've heard it, they have the big house and all that, And then they do that. The kids are there when guests come and all that, or, you know, like that, grandma comes and all that. Then they live in the little one. Then, as time goes on and the kids grow up, then they move into the little one. And now the big ones that the kids can use or this or that, but then that one's theirs. But in any case, still at one point, if nobody else, then death will kick you out. Somebody's going to kick you out. Yes. So, in other words, this is going to be the greatest suffering because it has the most variety of attachments and things and concepts and ideas and plans. So it's going to give the biggest amount of problem. So that's why the concept that I'm going to enjoy like this, it doesn't mean that one has to give up grihastha life. One has to give up the concept that I will enjoy myself in this life. No, you can engage in Krishna's service in that life. Right? No, that's why it's called an ashram. So that's the difference. It's whatever ashram you're in, you connect it to Krishna. You're absorbed in Krishna. But the idea is, no, I'll be happy and satisfied here. No, you won't. But if you're determined, the Vedas then give definition of how you can go about. What is proper grihastha life? Okay, you think you'll be happy? What are you looking for? You're looking for money, you're looking for children, you're looking for the arrangements and the interactions and the, you know, all the different opportunities for this and nice dress and that. So therefore it's there in the scriptures what you do. Go out, get a job, right? Get a house, do all these things, have your children, do all the, and so if you do it according to how the scriptures say, then what actually can be gained by you can be gained. You have to remember your own karma is there, so even though you want $1 billion, you may not get it. Right? Does that make sense? Sorry, but true.
We can get more.
Get more, yes. Yeah, you happen to be born in the UAE and all that, then you start off with trillions. Yeah, so then who would want $1 billion? Right? You know, it's like $1 billion. So, ooh, those guys. You know. Yeah, we hire those guys. You know.
It seems that I'm surprised. In 11 countries, it's only about pure bhakti.
It's only about pure bhakti. And in fact, you see, it's very much pushing that nothing else is. While the previous ones, it's showing how to connect all those other aspects to pure bhakti.
Yes.
But it always talks about pure bhakti. The Bhagavatam, right from the first verse, is only talking pure bhakti. But they show you how to connect everything else to that pure bhakti, especially the first six cantos.
Yes.
But we see from the seventh canto, it starts to bring up this point, that there's only pure bhakti. And then in the 11th canto, it's just driving the point home. Because that's all there is. So if one thinks that something else will make everything work nicely, it's illusion. Because, okay, we manage everything nicely. Then, because it's managed, it'll be that. Devotees will be satisfied. You know, there'll be plenty of facility and money. So Christian consciousness will go nicely. Not at all. Because if that was the case, all wealthy people on the planet would all be nice devotees. But they're not. Because it doesn't give rise to. You have to connect it. You can say, no, but we're connecting it. But then you have to be able to show how to connect it. Because Krishna here mechanically is going through and showing where the connection actually is. So if you can't make that, then you're making a mistake. And you'll be performing mixed devotion. So yes, there will be pure devotion when you chant, when you associate with devotion. But outside of that, in the indirect, then you may be dealing with that mixed devotion. And because of that, then they'll be distracted. So one has to be very, very clear that, no, someone has the nature of a manager, so what do they do for Krishna? Manage. It's not that we need management. It's that we engage everyone according to their nature. And since management is part of nature, therefore it's engaged. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. So because that, like Prabhupada mentioned, you know, if we don't build this big temple and do some big things, then what's the point of our being Westerners? We always do talk big, so if we don't do something big, what's the point? So that's the whole idea. Because Prabhupada already tried to, you know, sit down and chant 64 rounds. That didn't go over very well. So, yeah. So then do something big. But that's to engage the already existing nature. Right? It's not that doing something big, oh, that means I'm a better devotee. No, it's just because that's the mentality. You have to do something big. If you don't do something big, what's the point? You know, it's just like Krishna. So many times we see in the pastimes where it's brought up that Krishna is doing these wonderful activities, but it's technically not actually a wonderful because he's God. He can do anything. So it's not actually wonderful from that sense. What's wonderful is the interaction between him and the devotees. Like him coming into the wrestling arena, killing the wrestlers, killing Kamsa. Even though the demigods could not get rid of Kamsa. But Krishna just, you know, when he decides, he just goes up and punches him in the face. And that's it. That's all it took. You know, drags him around a bit by the hair. You know, makes it easier. But why is he doing that? Because of his devotees. Otherwise, the material nature is going to kill Kamsa anyway. Right? If nothing else, he'll just die of old age. You know, he'll be sitting there in the chair, right, out in the sun and all that. He'll join the afternoon sun and all that, and then he'll just fall out of the chair on the ground and be dead. Right? No? That's how it works, right? Yeah. So that's the whole point. He's going to die anyway. Right? So that's the point. So it's just a matter of to please the devotees, and so the devotee, you know, them personally, and then for to be able to others to hear and chant about that and remember. Then it's because whatever Krishna does is wonderful, but it's not that the mechanics of it is what's wonderful. He's God. What's wonderful is that he's done it for the devotees. That's the specialness. But being God, naturally, what he does is wonderful. So you said that. Yes. Yeah. So clear on this. So that's why all these different aspects of religion, their only value is connection to Krishna. So that's why what the acharyas give us within the religious processes, we take that, we do that. We don't want to expand beyond that. We don't want to do less. We just do that, and that's what makes the devotees ekayana. Right? What, just focused on the Lord. Like you'll mention, the devotees, you know, as the movement grows, I think it's Bhavishya and other Puranas mentioned, the devotees will be ekayana. Just focused on the Lord. You won't identify them by the Varnashram system. Not that they won't be following it, they're just not identified by that. They're just identified as devotees. That's what's important. Yes.
How can you get away from equating doing big things with greatness?
The point is we're not the to do something great means you have to deal with the material energy, which is under Krishna's control, with other energies, right? You have to apply energy on an energy. Like I want to move the pot, you have to use one energy to move another energy. But the point is where does that come from? That comes from Krishna. That potency comes from Krishna. Does that make sense? Therefore, we're an instrument in that process. We're not the one doing it. We're the instrument. So that's how you get away from thinking, I'm great because I did great stuff. Means you can do great stuff, that's just natural, you have to do great stuff. But you don't think I'm doing great stuff. Right? Because that mentality would be that even if you're not doing great stuff, you still think you're great. You know, that's the problem in the material world. We're doing nothing and we still think I'm fabulous. I do nothing better than anyone else. Yeah. Yeah, you come into your friend's house, sit on the couch, and go, you're not, means your quality of couch potato-ness is not very good. You come and sit on my couch, it's got a dip in it. So that's couch potato. Right? You know, it's always going to be. Right? No? Yes. Okay, chapter 15. Lord Krishna's description of mystic yoga perfections, pratigya, All mystic perfections can be achieved simply by devotional service to Krishna. Chapter 15 summarizes question and answers. Sri Uddhava asked Sri Krishna, question 11:22 of Srimad Bhagavatam, from 11:15:2, Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord Achyuta, by what process can mystic perfection be achieved? And what is the nature of such perfection? How many mystic perfections are there? Please explain these things to me. Indeed, you are the bestower of all mystic perfections." Sri Krishna answers this question throughout the rest of the chapter. Adhyaya Prakashika. The 8 major cities, 10 secondary cities arising from contemplation, and obstacles to yoga are described in the 15th chapter. Sardartha Darshani, 11:15:1. Just when we thought the 8 cities, now we find out there's 10 secondary ones. You know, like how you say, being able to open a beer bottle with your eyelid, you know, things like that. Yes.
It seems like Krishna, he's explaining in the Gita in here, and there's a pattern. You know, he explains yoga, jnana, karma, and bhakti. So what is the reason he does it, and several times in different scriptures? Why not only bhakti?
Because we have to be able to relate it to something, our situation that we're in. So therefore it's related to this, to the various, because now bhakti, do you not engage the senses? Yeah. Do you not engage the intelligence? Do you not engage the mind? Right, so you're showing how those processes are performed in their proper way and how they're yoga. But the point is that yoga should be to Krishna. And so once you know that, they're all used together. Because if you just describe bhakti, because if we say, oh, just do bhakti, what's the first thing? Give up all these 20 religious processes and just do bhakti. Then we'll think we do nothing. Right? Because what's our background? Nirvishesh Shunyavad. So it means, okay, we don't follow this, then there's nothingness. Right? And how would that be a conclusion? So either we're happy with that, because of the jnana aspect, we do nothing, it's just like that. Or we're not happy because of the karma aspect, and no, we have to be practical. You know, I have to take care of the family and pay the bills, so I can't do that. So, therefore, karma yoga's explained, jnana yoga's explained, jnana yoga's explained. So that we know how to connect. Because otherwise, is now, what's one of our, you know, a major area of preaching that devotees will use in the contemporary environment? Yoga. Right? But, you know, we'll think, oh wow, I'm doing so good, you know, yeah, I can do that asana, I know that asana and all that. Can you do it for 2 hours and 45 minutes? You know, can you stop the breathing? You know, do they even practice pranayama? And if they do, they generally never do which one's the holder? Kriya means holding it or breathing, you know, or holding it in or holding it out. They don't do these things. Because if you don't do them right, it actually messes up your nerves. So it has to be approached peacefully. People are coming to yoga because of the mode of passion. They're doing it for health, you know, social things, some exercise, something like that they're doing. So it's not based on the mode of goodness. So therefore, they can't do pranayama. And so this points out that, you know, don't think that you're doing so great. Does that make sense? You know, what is karma, what is jnana? Is that we just do how much is necessary to please Krishna. And these other things that if we think, no, but there's so many more important things, then how good are you at it? You know what I'm saying? Because always the false ego thinks that I'm special, I'm great, I'm unique. You know, it's like that Gita verse, you know. You know, I am the best, you know. Yeah, Ishwaraham Bogi. Yes, I am the big bogey. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it always has to be, because these are what you're dealing with, body, mind, and words. So to engage body, mind, and words, you have to know how they mechanically function, what's the appropriate way, and how they're connected to the Lord. So then that means karma yoga, jnana yoga, jnana yoga. We don't really study karma, you know, jnana and jnana on its own. Because we see here, Krishna just gave that, you know, in that on that one page. He finished the whole system. That's all, what is it, 8 chapters of Patanjali. So that's something someone would be studying for years and years and years. But this is actually just what it is. It's just a matter of absorb yourself in the Lord. No, He's there. Krishna's God is there. Then when you understand that, how He's everything in that, then that it should be switched to Krishna the person. Right? And if you can do it just directly, Krishna the person, then that already accomplishes. What's the point? Why do a lower thing if you can already do the upper thing? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, you have the theme where someone goes to a teacher and wants to learn something. So they start them, they show a basic. He says, okay, this is what you do. And then normally they'd show it and then someone would go practice and after a week or something they kind of have it. And then, you know, after a few weeks they kind of get it to the point where it's workable. But the person does it immediately. So does the teacher not go on to the next one? Right? They just keep going. How much it is until they have to practice. So the point is if you can already remember the Lord, then what's the need of these lower levels of processes? But in any case, since body, mind, and words is engaged in the Lord's service, then these activities, then they're straightforward for the pure devotees. They know this is what you do. And so they're able to do it. Does that work?
Yeah. Okay. The doubt is some devotees, they complain, is that we've given the highest process, but our adhikar is very low. So then we try to practice it, and we do it like for 20, 30 years, but we do it badly. We don't do it nicely. And then we just go away because we never got the taste, or we never actually accomplished anything. So wouldn't it be better to give us something, you know, lower, and then we go like step by step?
What's being left out of the equation is, do they have the qualifications to function at any of those religious processes since they begin with the mode of goodness? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the point is it's more mechanical and more difficult than the devotional process. The devotional process is straightforward. You know, that's the whole thing, is the devotional process, it's just being by going to that, because you're functioning on the platform of the soul. And then, as a consequence, you're engaging your conditioning. But if we take the conditioning of Malecha and Yavana, what is the qualification of a Malecha and Yavana? Do they like following rules? I mean, in the Abrahamic religion, 10 rules are given. 10. You know? Like, don't kill people. Don't steal their donkey. Don't walk off with their wife. Like that. Somebody says, you know, don't swear, you know, all day. But people have so much difficulty with this, and this is 10 simple rules, you know, because if they want to get into it, any of these other processes, they have to be so clean, 3 baths a day, how they clean, how they do that, all the different water and everything like that. They have to be able to understand that and appreciate that, so they won't be able to do that. So only by the power of bhakti can they even qualify to function within a regulated environment. That's all. But the point is what is the goal they're looking for? Because you said they do for 25, 30 years, go away, because they don't get anything. But what were they looking for? What were they thinking they were going to get in this 25, 30 years?
Well, I guess different things. They thought they'll get the position, they'll get the, you know, some facilities, or even the taste for the holy name.
Okay, so let's start with the one. The facilities and all that. If they hadn't joined Krishna consciousness, would they be in a superior position like they're expecting to be within this movement?
Probably not.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? that's the whole point, is that if you want to work on that material, well, what material qualifications do you have? Because you are working with your conditioning. How far does your conditioning go? You know, I mean, to sell books and other things like that, they'll explain so many things and how, yeah, you just think about it, then you'll get it, or just make a plan and you'll get it, or, you know, just be confident and you'll get it, or, you know what I'm saying? They have different ways to trick you into buying their book. But the point is what would they have? How many people are moving up in the way that they think they are? So if you would be at your job, and after 30 years you'd still be at that job, and you hope that they don't fire you 6 months before you retire, so that you get your pension, and you're cool with that, then why wouldn't you be cool with coming into the temple, taking up service, and just doing whatever you're told for the next 30 years? Why is it that you have to become the temple president, the regional secretary, the GBC, or the guru, or whatever it is that you imagine that you should be? Because where would you be? I mean, means in the material world, are there not karmic gurus? You know, gurus in materialism, like that. Okay, how many Jordan Petersons are there? Right? So then, why would they think that they can become one? Out in the material world, are they going to be one? Do they have the chutzpah to be out there and just tell people what they think? No, they're so worried about what this and that one is, so they can't do it. Right? Plus, he has the brains. He is a PhD. Right? You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is materially, he's very qualified. That's why he's a guru on the material platform. Do they have that qualification? No. Now, if they say no, but it's a spiritual movement, that brings us to the other one. Taste for the holy name. Do they want a taste for the holy name, or they just expect it to happen? Are they every day thinking, when will I have that taste for the holy name? Right? Yeah, it's Bhaktivinoda Thakur Singh. What is that? Shudhaname Ruchi. When will that happen? How often do they think, when will it happen?
Every 20 years.
Okay, so then, so good. So that means once it's happened, and if they'll stick around for 40, then it'll be twice. You know, for how long? But now let's say they think like that for, whatever it is. It was a good kirtan or something like that. They're being inspired for, half the day or even the whole day, maybe even the next morning. Okay, but if they were like that every day, did they not feel good when they felt like that, when they were thinking like that? Then why not do that every day? But if you think, no, it'll just happen. That's why vandana is there. It's called prayer. Is that you're actually praying for that. You're surrendering. Atmani Vedana. Are you giving yourself? Right? The taste means now you're tasting Krishna. Right? So have you given yourself? And you're expecting Krishna is going to give himself? That's why it says, you give up material desires, then everything will come. But you hold on to material desires, then, hey, you get your material desires. But that, even that, so if you're working on that, according to what you would deserve. If you were not a devotee, how much would you get?
Well, that explanation gives people space for speculation. Then
They wouldn't. If they're thinking I would, that exactly is the person who wouldn't. Because the person who would, who actually can, would say, well, no, we're gonna make our effort here, and then we'll see where it goes. Anyone who says, no, but if I wasn't a devotee, I'd be this, I'd be that, 100%, they would never be anything what they said. 100% guaranteed. Because the guys that would be wouldn't say that. Never. They just do it. Because that's the thing. They say, I would have been. So in their mind, they're already there. They have the things. They're enjoying all the facilities. The guy who's actually successful, he just thinks that would be good. What does it take to get there? Do it. And when he gets there, then he sits back and enjoys. So that's the problem, is that the modern economic market works on people what they think they could be rather than what they can actually be.
Yes.
They're Buddhist.
Hmm?
They're Buddhistic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. It's all about the mind. Because if you think it, then it's real. Yeah. Because as long as you think it, because it gives an experience. This is something that came up. It's just interesting. It's a side point. Is that, you know, first class, second class, third class intelligence. So first class by hearing, second by seeing others, third by experiencing yourself. And it just struck me is that generally we'd always consider experience means actually physically going through it, but it doesn't have to. Experience means that in your mind you go through it to the point where you experience it and you get all the emotions and the feelings and all that. Does that make sense? So it can also be there. So in the process of Shravana, you hear. You remove doubts. Now, you could at that point realize. Because in hearing, you've contemplated, and then, you know, you'll apply that, and then it gets immediate results. But otherwise, generally you're working with the second and third class intelligence in manana. Not that you're not working with first there, but it'll be very quick, because it'll be immediate application. But then the second is that, you know, you're seeing how others are doing and all that, you're trying to apply it and then seeing what's there and then trying to apply that into your life. Then that's work. The third class is that you think about it until you get an experience and in that you're convinced or not, you know, what to do or not do. Then you apply it and then that will also give an experience. So there's the experience from the internal, there's experience from the external. So you can, just by thinking about it, get that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that'll be the difference. Because sometimes you think, no, only if you've gone through it. But that, just like that one story, Puranic story, I think, with Narad Muni. He asked Krishna about material existence or something. And Krishna said, first go down to the river and get some water. Yeah. So he took the pot, and when he went to dip it, he saw his reflection and then went through this whole thing where he got married and the family and the children and everything's going fabulous. And then something happened and it all was gone away and he was in such anxiety. And then he realized, you know, it's just a reflection of the water. Then he comes back to Krishna and then he already understood. So he experienced it. Like that. Does that make sense?
So dreaming stage, actually, it's an experience.
It's an experience. That's why you have a good dream or a bad dream. Like that. It's an experience, but it's based on already the samskaras that are there. It's this further thing. But that's why it's that, if you like the man hears something, and this is good, okay, nice, you know. Or it's good, and that, okay, you contemplate, you see others, oh yeah, it is good. You know what I'm saying? But the feminine nature has to go to the third level. But that can be done by contemplation on the spot. Thinking, then it'll be this, and then you get that experience and that. Okay, then they're convinced. So that has to go through the process. Does that make sense? But it has to be to experience. That's why you see the Purana is so important. Because it will always explain things in the context of an experience. Well, the Vedanta Sutra doesn't. Right, so only when we bring it to that, now it becomes relatable, right? With the Bhagavatam and all that. But otherwise, on its own, it's not relatable. Right? But the Bhagavatam is, because we see people and they're going through what their happenings to them, and not, you know, what happens to Yayati and this, and then he's there, and because he's proud, then he falls down, and because of this, then he goes back, and you know, so you get an experience. So we're trying to be convinced by first class, by hearing. But if not, the second and third kind of intelligences are there through that process of contemplation and deliberation. Then it becomes useful when we practice. So it's already very nicely set up. But in that, you're engaging body, mind, and words. Because you're going to see what will be, you know, the physical situation, the sensual, the intellectual, the emotional, all these different things. So the point is, since it's that, are they contemplating getting a taste? Wanting a taste? Are they surrendering that's what they want? Not just saying it, but actually meaning it. Because if they do, then Krishna will reciprocate. Right? Are they praying for pure devotion? Is that what they want? Is that what they're trying to do? Even if they're not engaged on a level, like he says, oh, we're not qualified. That's true. But what's wrong with desiring it? Right? You know, on the material platform, the individual desires everything in the universe. Are they qualified for it? No. So then, why not do that on the spiritual platform? Why only reserve that for the material platform? Right? Because then you know they want materialism. So if on all platforms you're trying, then you, because you want spiritual. But if we simply put it in externals, these will all go away. Yudhishthira had a kingdom. He loses it, gets a kingdom, loses it. That's the way the material world is. So why put that as symptoms of success? Right? Because Lord Chaitanya says, when will tears, you know, decorate my eyes and stuff like that? Not when will a big palace decorate my home? You know, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's how it works. Yeah?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.